Maria Schneider Orchestra and a composition inspired by a poem by Ted Kooser. It comes from Schneider's latest album, Data Lords. The Sun Waited for Me, featuring Donnie McCaslin on tenor sax. This is Jazz Nightly on SDPB Radio. Good evening, I'm Carl Gerhe, coming to you from the Janet and Dion Kaler studio. Since the release of her debut album, Evanescence, in 1994, Maria Schneider has established herself as one of the most remarkable and influential composers in contemporary jazz with her own singular voice. And in addition to her work with her New York-based orchestra, she's also written music for soprano Dawn Upshaw and collaborated with rock icon David Bowie. Maria Schneider grew up in the small southwest Minnesota community of Windom. Her father was an engineer for Kimberly-Clark and also a ham radio operator and a pilot. Schneider's childhood memories of growing up in a rural Minnesota farming community are heard throughout her music, particularly the more pastoral and expansive compositions. But Schneider is also something of an activist who's concerned about the threat to artists and the human spirit by technology and big data companies. She says her life is caught between two very polarized worlds, the digital world and the natural world, and her ambitious new album, Data Lords, is a musical exploration of these two polar extremes. Data Lords is available on a two-CD set that's split between these two opposite themes. Data Lords comes in a deluxe package featuring Schneider's extensive liner notes and some original artwork by Windom artist Aaron Horkey. Data Lords has been hailed as the most daring work of Schneider's career, and the album made many year-end best of 2020 lists. I spoke to Maria Schneider in December, just before Christmas, and I asked her when she started writing the music for the album and if she had intended on composing music contrasting the digital and natural worlds.
So I've been very much an advocate for the music industry against a lot of the things that are happening in the world of big data that's really destroying the music economy. And so I'd been looking at that a lot and writing. And so, you know, that was always in my head. And, you know, when I write music, I just sit down and I start fooling around with ideas and just looking for something that inspires me. And then a lot of times those things attach themselves to certain imagery or ideas or memories. I've written a lot of pieces about my home back in southwest Minnesota, but what it was conjuring up were all these images and thoughts about big data. But then after writing a piece like that, I would find myself writing sort of a palate cleanser, something inspired by, there's a piece called Stone Song that's inspired by a piece of pottery by a wonderful potter named Jack Troy, or the poetry of Ted Kooser, or, you know, various other things, and it kind of ping-ponged back and forth. And for a long time, I was thinking, oh my God, I don't know how I'll ever record any of this music because it's so diverse. And then one day I looked at it and I said, what is it telling me about my life? And then I thought, it's telling me that I'm struggling between these two worlds myself. And so then I decided to consciously write a few pieces to fill out this idea of what it is now.
Well, the music on the digital world is a little darker, quite a bit darker than the music that's on our natural world. For you, your emotional state perhaps as you were writing it, was it different? Were you still having fun writing the darker music in the first half of the album?
Oh, yeah. You know, one thing I should say, so some of my earlier music that I wrote in the early 90s, that was on my album Evanescence, it was a little bit darker. There was a piece called Dance Your Monster to My Soft Song, a piece called Wurgly. And so in 2014, David Bowie came to me and wanted to collaborate. And he said, you know, I really like your dark stuff. And he really wanted me to delve into that in collaborating with him. And so I started to rediscover the joy of writing dark music. So it was sort of, we can blame David Bowie for this one. And, you know, writing dark doesn't mean you're sitting there brooding and miserable, you know. I tried to make it beautiful and fun. You know, Sputnik to me is very beautiful. You know, it's imagining satellites, but it feels like outer space. And I think it's very beautiful. And Data Lords, even though it's about artificial intelligence taking over us and destroying us, but it's sort of a beautiful approach to that, there can be, you know. And Don't Be Evil is meant to be a little bit tongue-in-cheek. It's mocking Google for their motto. So I tried to make it kind of a mockery kind of thing.
Then you have another track that I think maybe pushes you in a little bit newer territory, but this also is based very much on your memory, and it refers to your father as a ham radio operator. CQ, is anybody there? The idea behind this is the comparison between older technology and the newer technology.
Yeah, and that was pointed out to me by somebody who... You know, people fund my records through my website, and I a lot of times make videos that I share with people talking about my music or my process. And there was a man who saw, I was holding up a picture from my house in Windom, Minnesota, and my dad was an engineer. In the old days, Windom was the flax capital of the world, and there was a lot of flax grown in South Dakota, North Dakota, Minnesota. And Dad, in our yard, we had these huge towers, ham radio towers. And he saw them and right away keyed in that Dad must have been a ham, and he was. And that was a huge part of my childhood. And he said, do you see the connections that ham radio was about connecting with the world? And he said, but the differences are, and so the differences are that ham radio, there's total accountability. When you contact somebody, you have to give them your license. You can't use it for commercial activity, which completely contrasts the internet, also the transparency part. And there was a code of ethics. Imagine if we had a code of ethics on the internet. And then the whole idea with Morse code, well, it was longs and shorts traveling on an electronic signal for communication. And computers are ones and zeros. It's another binary language. So it was actually his idea, and I've never taken an idea from somebody ever, you know. But he said, you should write a piece using Morse code. And so every rhythm in this piece spells out words in Morse code like power, greed, data, AI, CQ, which, you know, hands will say CQ, CQ, this is W0ABF, and CQ, the letters. It sounds, it's a great rhythm, ba doo doo da da ba da 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 da. But the letters CQ literally is like seek you. You know, I seek you on W0ABF, and then you search for people. So that was a really difficult piece to write, but I think it's really fun. You know, some people might think it's dark, but I think it's beautiful.
It almost sounds like, as you're composing it, that you had a puzzle to solve. Is like how do I fit these Morse code rhythms into the music?
Yeah, I went on a Morse code generator and I put in all sorts of words that I could imagine. You know, the words like power, greed. There's the word help. Help has a great rhythm. Ba ba doo da ba bu da doo da bu da dee da. And you know, a lot of them have really good, you know, kind of swing or something. So when I'd find one with a good rhythm, I'm like, okay, let me see if I can work with that. You know, so it ended up being really fun. And the whole beginning is supposed to be kind of sort of conjuring up what I used to hear with Dad. You know, it was sort of his mysterious world over in the corner of the living room that I never really understood, with all these crazy sounds coming out of his ham radio, where voices would be split into all sorts of harmonic colors and sounds. And so I was just trying to get that feeling of hearing the little Morse code messages coming left and right from all over as people are trying to connect and you're hearing different things. And you know, it's a weird piece.
We'll be right back. Now, you grew up in southwest Minnesota, as we're talking about an hour and a half from where I'm sitting right here.
Oh, wow.
And I'm curious about how much of that experience comes out. A lot of your music deals with your memories and the landscape, and I'm particularly curious about the landscape aspect of how that comes out in your music, and not just in the music that deals with your memories, because there seems to be oftentimes an expansive nature to your music, that this openness, swelling orchestrations that kind of remind me sort of like an aural equivalent of, say, long horizons and open skies.
Wow, you're very intuitive. I think you're exactly right. You know, I think for so many artists and people, you can't unwrite, you know, not that you would want to, what your childhood is. It's your first exposure to everything in life. Even though when I was a kid, sometimes I remember feeling like, oh, it's flat. There's not a lot here. You know, mountains would be so exciting. Or, you know, we'd go someplace where there were lots of trees and it felt, you know, so amazing. But now when I go back, it feels so exotic to me. And it is exotic. That kind of open sky, that open space, what prairie there is, you know, it's so beautiful. And it made its mark on me. And another aspect that a reviewer, kind of a critic or whatever, in New York pointed out, he did this article in the New York Times, and he was talking to me, and I was talking about Dad flying, and he said, do you think that impacted you, you know, flying? Because the plane was in it was at Kimberly-Clark. It was basically in our backyard, you know, in a field. And so we flew a lot. And I thought, oh my gosh, it's true that there's a soaring aspect to my music. And I've always felt that wide open landscape, like you said, it's there for sure. And you're listening to Jazz Nightly on SDPB Radio. My guest is Minnesota-born composer Maria Schneider. Her latest album is The Remarkable Data Lords, which explores two very polarized worlds, the digital world and the natural world. And you work with a regular group of musicians, some of whom have been playing in your orchestras, going way back to your first album, Evanescence. How important is it to you to have a dependable group of musicians that you continually write for? Oh, it's everything. You know, I think my music, as much as my music is, you know, we're talking about things from my own personal childhood, also, it's the years of working with these musicians and them putting, you know, it's jazz, so they're putting their creative stamp on my music, the rhythm section, the soloists, and even the horn players and their interpretation who are playing the written music but interpreting it in ways sometimes that I didn't immediately expect, and then I hear and I'm like, ooh, I like that. You know, I'm going to write to that. Jazz improvisation is all about listening and sharing and exchange of ideas, and that connectivity is what jazz is about. But I feel that in a much slow-mo version, you know, over time, each gig that they play and they respond to the music in a certain creative way makes me then respond with my next piece, maybe writing in a different way. So I think they've had a tremendous influence on my writing.
So you have these particular soloists in mind, like, oh, this I'm going to write something for saxophonist Donnie McCaslin or trombonist Marshall Jilks.
Oh, yeah. And they each, you know, they each have their own thing. And even all the things that I think I know about them, so many times they surprise me, and then I'm like, oh, man, I could, because sometimes we'll switch up solos at some night at a gig, you know, it's like, just for fun. And then you hear somebody playing on something with a perspective you never imagined, but it's also great. Yes, when you have players who have such an imprint in your mind, you can't help but write for them. You know, they're like, they're characters, musical characters. And, you know, so I try to highlight them and give them something very special to play on.
On the other side of that equation, these musicians that you've worked with for a few decades now, how comfortable are they then knowing what you're doing, that they feel comfortable in the settings that you have for them?
I think it always takes us a while to find things, because sometimes I'm not sure, you know, I sort of have in my mind a direction that they're going to take. But we have to feel it out and feel what works, and they try different things. And what did you think of that? Yeah, I think that really worked. Maybe, you know, or should we try electronics on this one? You know, and we'll experiment. But the beauty is, the longer the band plays something, especially after we record something, and they hear it. Because, you know, when they're playing it, they hear it, but they're in it. And they're hearing it from where they're sitting inside of a band. Which, if you were to walk around inside of my band back by the trumpets, oh my God, the music is such a different perspective. So after we record, when they hear it, then the music evolves to a whole nother level, because now they're like, oh, that's what it sounds like, you know? I've even had my players say that to me, which is really hysterical, you know? But yeah, it takes us time to find and shape a piece. And sometimes it just takes playing it in front of an audience again and again for everybody. And then one night you just say, oh, yeah, that feels good. But here's the thing about jazz musicians and the musicians I love and the musicians I have in my band is they are also players that don't want to repeat themselves. So they never find something that works and say, okay, that's how I'll approach it every time. These guys, once they find that something really works, it's almost a sad day, because you know that they're never really going to want to do that again, because they don't like to repeat themselves. I have people in my band, like my guitar player. He's so hell-bent on never repeating himself that if I love something, I never mention it, because I know I'll never hear it again if I do, you know?
That's Ben Maunder, right?
Ben Maunder, yeah.
And he's been with you pretty much from the beginning. I know he's on Evanescence, which, what, came out in 1994?
Yeah, wow. You are an amazing interviewer, you know? You are so, wow. You ask really good questions, and you know the music. It's amazing. Thank you.
Well, I've been there since the beginning, since Evanescence came out, and I saw your band a couple of times, what, 2002, 2006, when you were at the U of M. So, I'm a fan, I guess I should say. I've really find a lot of meaning in your music. It really affects me.
Well, thank you. Did you see the band when we were in Wyndham?
I did not.
Yeah, I hope one day we can get back to Wyndham again. Playing my music in Wyndham was, first of all, especially that first time we did it, was best and favorite concert I ever had. There was just something about playing pieces that I had written clearly for and about people sitting in the audience with things and memories and a landscape and everything that we all share and love. Oh, my God, that was the best, most fulfilling feeling ever. Really was amazing.
And it must have been amazing for the musicians as well to be where you came from and where some of the inspiration for a lot of your music came from.
It was. And for some of them, I think it was almost kind of sad, because literally every person said that going back to their home, there wouldn't be that community still there. It wouldn't be like that. They were amazed by it, you know, that could still exist, and that my home could still feel like such a home and such a community that I still was a part of 20 years after leaving there. It is pretty amazing.
In dealing with the subject matter of data lords, do you think that sense of community is something that is being lost with the modern technology that, say, 20, 30 years from now, that the communities, a rural community like Wyndham, that'll be gone? Or do you think there'll always be a little bit of that there?
No, I think those things are going away. I tell a story in the liner notes about this. I guess it was last summer, not this last summer, but the one before. This summer we just pretend it didn't exist. The one before, I had my big, I don't know, whatever reunion, 30 or I don't even want to think what one it was. But we did a hayride or whatever going around town in a parade or something. And one of the guys in my class, we were talking, and he lives there, you know, and he said, you know, it's just not the same for young people in Wyndham anymore. They're all kind of in their own worlds on their stuff. I mean, we'd all go out and meet and, you know, let's put a game together or let's go down to the ballpark and watch softball together. Or we were connected. And he said, they're not now. And that makes me so sad. And so, you know, if people are like that as kids, and I think adults are like that, it's going to be a different kind of a world, for sure.
How do you think that also affects the way people relate to your music? Because the music on Data Lords, for example, it's not just something you can put on in the background and just let it go and have it while you're doing other things. This is music that you have to listen to closely. It's a listening experience. It's a participation on the side of the listener as well, to be engaged in what's happening with the music and what the players are doing.
It's like you're a friggin' mind reader. I knew this is an issue that people don't, because I don't do it to the degree I did. Listening just to listen to music, not doing it while you're doing something else. We've become so much a society of people that do things and multitask and looking at your cell phone while you're eating dinner with somebody. I don't do that, but I see a lot of people doing it. And so part of the reason I made such a lavish package on this, and I do want to talk about the artist that did the painting on the front, because he's from Wyndham. But the part of the reason I wanted to make such a beautiful package is, and really write such extensive notes, I thought they were necessary for the music, but is to make people want to sit and just say, wow, I want to dive into this, almost like we did when albums were around. You know, you would just, and we had no distractions back then, and we would just listen. And the music does require that. If you're going to put on Data Lords and drive, chances are you're going to get a speeding ticket. You know, or it's going to be really unnerving, and you certainly can't do it while you're having a conversation or dinner, you know. So you're right. Well, I don't know how many people can do that anymore. How many people have the skill for that anymore?
Well,
I'm not sure.
Yeah, well, I remember, you know, now music is everywhere. You can just click on, you know, and there, blam, you can have anything. But when I was a kid growing up, you know, you'd buy that one album. You'd bring it home, you'd take your finger and slice it and get the shrink wrap and pull the album out, and you'd put it on, and oftentimes I would have the lights off and I'd put that on and just close my eyes and listen to the music. And like you said, even now I still oftentimes I don't give the dedication I need to music. It's just everywhere. Sometimes it's losing its specialness, I think.
It is, when there's so much. You know, I think when we had less to listen to, we listen so deeply, and we listen. I mean, I talk to students about this all the time. I say, you know, when I was at University of Minnesota, but Eastman, I remember there was one phone at the end of the hallway. We had no computer. All we had were our books, our little stereo in our room. Everybody had that. And then we'd have to go to the school to practice, and we'd have our friends knocking on a door. And so we would listen. I would sit in front of that record player and listen again and again, and like you say, with the lights out, and it would be such a transportive experience. And I knew those records so well. And, you know, now I think this idea that listening to so much, I don't know that it helps if, you know, as a musician, you know, listening to so much, does that help them? Or is it better to listen to a few things and just love them? And as a person, you know, what's healthier? I miss those old days, and I've been thinking a lot lately how to pull my life back and become more like that, you know, and it might mean pulling back from work a lot. Because as a human, I want my life to be that again. I don't want this kind of, you know, drive-through kind of life that I feel like I'm also living right now.
Talk about right now, we're in the midst of this pandemic. How has that affected your career and your music? This album came out, I think, this summer, right in the middle of everything, and we're still going through it. How has that affected the way this music is getting out to people? And I imagine you're not able to play with the band.
Yeah, all our gigs were canceled. You know, normally when you have a new record, you know, you do tours and stuff, which we had, and that's where you really, really make the money on the CD, is selling them, and it's a new record and everything. It was completely gone. We always played every Thanksgiving at the Jazz Standard, a great club in New York. A lot of Windhamites would come out there to hear the band, and people came from all over the world. We did that. This would be our 16th year. And, of course, it didn't happen, and now the club is closing, which is just devastating. I do have a thing right now on my website if people want to watch it. If they go to my website, on the front page, there's a free video, and you can watch a little bit of the Standard and then the going in and out of the recording session and then a Zoom call with the band. That's pretty hysterical. But, yeah, it's for me with the record, oddly, the concept, I think because of COVID, has really hit people. This idea that we are dependent on the internet, and in some ways it's giving us beautiful things, you know, connectivity and Zoom and all this. But then in another way, we're all Zoomed out. And I think a lot of people have really tried to kind of embrace those other things that are more represented on the second CD, The Natural World. And I know that when the pandemic started, I couldn't find bird seed at any store. Everybody, they said, oh, everybody's feeding the birds this year. Then I went to the garden store. I wanted to plant some native plants. There was nothing left, you know. They said, everybody's working on their gardens, you know. And I thought, wow, this is fantastic, you know. So I think, and a lot of people have written to me that it really touched something in them. So I think it was the right time for the message. I do think so. Oddly, it just happened that way.
Well, Maria Schneider, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me for Jazz Nightly. And again, congratulations on Data Lords. This is a remarkable collection of music.
Oh, thank you so much. I just want to say one thing for anybody that looks at the album or sees it or sees the cover online. The artist that did the cover, his name is Aaron Horkey. He's from Windham. He's an unbelievable artist, and his art is definitely it's a cross between prairie images and that anybody, you know, coming from where you come from is going to relate to, but then it has sometimes an apocalyptic kind of quality to it, And I just knew he was the perfect artist for this. He's extraordinary. Then people can find him on Instagram too, Aaron Horkey, H-O-R-K-E-Y. It's beautiful to me. The image on the cover of this album just says it all.
Yeah, you have a decaying leaf, you know, the brown leaf, and then you have sort of a digitized leaf on the other side, or on the other half.
Yeah, and so many people think the leaf on the left half is a photograph, and it's not. It's painted. It's by Aaron. It's extraordinary. And the artwork inside, too, is amazing. He's really something.
Well, Maria Schneider, again, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
That's Minnesota-born composer Maria Schneider. I spoke with her in December. Her latest album is called Data Lords. It's split into two halves, the digital world and our natural world. It's released through the crowdfunding label Artist Share. For more information on the album and to also check out some videos and more, you can visit her website, mariaschneider.com.